Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant, John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will bring you the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, Philippine officials say they may put hotels on an island that the country claims in the disputed South China Sea. Experts say the move could be an effort to boost the Philippines' territorial claim over Titu Island and to counter Chinese expansion in the sea. Philippine Defense Secretary Delphine Lorenzana recently spoke about planned improvements for Titu. He said the main goal is to repair a runway on the island by the end of the year. But Lorenzana said there were also plans to build military structures on Titu for troops and maybe some hotels for Filipinos who would like to go there as tourists. Such plans would make Titu one of only a small number of landforms in the South China Sea with tourism activists. The 37-hectare island is currently home to about 100 people. China claims most of the South China Sea, an important waterway through which trillions of dollars in trade pass each year. The area contains rich fishing waters and is believed to hold oil and natural gas. The Philippines, Taiwan, Vietnam, Brunei, and Malaysia all claim ownership to parts of the sea. Several other claimants have criticized China for using undersea landforms in the South China Sea to build artificial islands. China has placed military structures and equipment on some of the islands. Alan Chong is a professor at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore. He told VOA that tourism can serve as a form of virtual occupation of an island. Chong said this can help a country show that there is legitimization of civilian activity in disputed territories. Titu is one of nine Philippine-controlled landforms in the larger, heavily disputed Spratly Islands group. In April, as many as 200 Chinese boats surrounded Titu, which raised concerns in the Philippines. The boats later headed back out to sea. In 2012, China took control from the Philippines another group of disputed islands called Scarborough Shoal. Fabrizio Bozzato is an expert on Asia and the Pacific at the Taiwan Strategy Research Association. He told VOA that tourism can help establish an island's actual use to support territorial claims. Bozzato said he thinks the Philippines' efforts to improve Titu are an attempt to demonstrate actual control and use of the island. He added that such action on Titu could also support Philippine territorial claims over other islands the country controls. Malaysia, China, and Vietnam already permit tourism in disputed areas of the sea. Malaysia first began letting tourists visit a diving area on a Spratly holding called Leong Leong in the 1980s. Vietnam offers South China Sea tours to its own citizens. And China is developing tourism around Sansha, a 1,000-person city it built in the sea's Paracel Islands. A Chinese tourist company says a ship named Princess Coconut is planning to take visitors from the Chinese mainland to Sansha for 2-day trips.
A group of farmers in Nigeria is using a technology-based method to grow crops from moisture in the air. The method, known as aeroponics, does not involve soil. Instead, plant roots hang in the air. The roots take in a nutrient solution from a watery mist. Aeroponics is not well known in Nigeria, but farmers there are working to make the technique more popular. The technique could make a big difference in places like the city Abeokuta. Violence and desertification, the process by which fertile land becomes desert, have made huge amounts of land unfarmable. Biochemist Samson Oboli is popularly known as Nigeria's smart farmer. He and his team are growing crops without soil at the technology-based farm they started 3 years ago in Abeokuta. Oboli says they are on a campaign to end seasonal food scarcity in Nigeria.
Because we are the one controlling everything that the plant requires, we are not depending on season. So it's no longer seasonal farming. It is just farming any time of the year, meaning you can plant any time of the year, we can harvest any time of the year.
But setting up the aeroponic farm was not easy. It required financing of more than $180,000, Oboli said. And some people in Abeokuta were very much against this non-traditional method of farming.
We are called wizards, demons, that we are doing something unnatural.
He added that it took a lot of effort to change people's minds about aeroponics. In Nigeria, about 30 million hectares of farmland is being used instead of the 78.5 million hectares required for food security. In the north, communal conflict, militancy, and desertification are the top reasons the farmland is being lost. And only 49% of the land is fertile, a situation that worries traditional farmers like Abubakar Ibrahim. I don't have any other place that I'll go to farm apart from here, he said. And here, already the land has become weak. Aeroponics, however, does not require traditional farm work or much land. Nutrients for the plants are controlled by a recycling system, greatly increasing productivity. I'm Alice Bryant.
American teenagers and adults may be more likely to try drugs for the first time during the summer months. That was a finding from a new study. A report on the study was published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine. In all, 31% of young people and adults who use the drug cannabis tried it for the first time during the summer, the study found. Summer was also the starting season for around 30% of people who tried the drugs cocaine, LSD, and ecstasy. Joseph Palomar is a researcher at the New York University School of Medicine and the lead author of the report. More research is needed to identify why summer might be a risk factor for people using drugs for the first time, he said. Palomar added that the link between the season and drug use may be related to people having more free time and to warmer weather, which is linked with more outdoor social gatherings. For the study, researchers examined survey data from over 394,000 people. All of them were 12 years of age and older. The information was collected between 2011 and 2017. Researchers noted that the study had limitations. One was that people who took the survey may not have remembered exactly when they first tried drugs. Sharon Levy is the director of the Adolescent Substance Use and Addiction Program at Boston Children's Hospital in Massachusetts. She was not involved in the study. Drug initiation and drug use happens all year long, with a relatively small bump in the summer, she said in an email. While it is important for children to have social time over the summer, parents should not permit activities that they would not allow kids to do during the rest of the year, she wrote. I would also recommend that whenever your kids are going to a party or a concert, or to spend time out of the house, that you know where they are, who they are with, and what they are planning on doing, she added. Dr. Levy also suggested that parents should speak very directly with teens before concerts and other events where drug use is common. Children often fail to understand parents when they say things like, "Don't do anything dumb," Levy said. The parent means, "Don't use alcohol or drugs," but kids often hear, "Don't drink too much," or "Don't get into trouble," which are very different things. I'm John Russell.
Researchers say they have discovered the first nearby super-Earth planet that could possibly support life. The discovery was made by a spacecraft designed to look for planets outside of our solar system. An international team of astronomers recently announced their findings in the publication Astronomy and Astrophysics. The new discovery is known as an exoplanet, a planet that orbits a star outside of our own solar system. Exoplanets are not easy to identify with telescopes. This is because they are often hidden by the bright light of the stars they orbit. In an effort to help discover such planets, NASA launched its Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS, last year. TESS was designed to expand upon the work of previous exoplanet discoveries made with telescopes. More than 3,500 new exoplanets have been discovered over the past 20 years. A super-Earth is a planet that has a mass between 1 and 10 times that of Earth. The team of astronomers says the newly discovered exoplanet called GJ357D, is about 31 light-years away from our solar system. The planet orbits a star named GJ357. NASA said in an announcement that the planet appears to orbit within its star's habitable zone. A leading member of the research team was Diana Kosakowski from the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg, Germany. She said in a statement that GJ357D should be receiving about the same amount of energy from its star as Mars does from the Sun. If the planet has a dense atmosphere, which will take future studies to determine, it could trap enough heat to warm the planet and allow liquid water on its surface, Kosakowski said. NASA says the planet's mass is at least 6.1 times Earth's, and it orbits its star every 55.7 days. Lisa Kaltenegger is an associate professor at New York's Cornell University. She is also a member of the TESS science team. Kaltenegger called the new discovery exciting. This is TESS's first discovery of a nearby super-Earth that could harbor life, she told the university's Cornell Chronicle. TESS is a small, mighty mission with a huge reach, she said. Kaltenegger added that the discovery will provide valuable information about this and other large exoplanets outside our solar system. With a thick atmosphere, the planet GJ357D could maintain liquid water on its surface like Earth, and we could pick out signs of life with telescopes that will soon be online, she said. NASA says TESS observed the GJ357 star system last February. Researchers estimated the star is about one-third the mass of our Sun. Several other exoplanets were discovered in the system after being caught by TESS cameras. One of those exoplanets was identified as GJ357b, a planet 22% larger than Earth, the astronomers reported. It orbits 11 times closer to its star than Mercury does to our Sun. GJ357b is thought to have surface temperatures up to 254 degrees Celsius. GJ357b is considered a hot Earth, said Enrique Pale, a lead member of the discovery team with the Institute of Astrophysics of the Canary Islands. Pale noted that the planet could not hold life, but it is one of the best rocky planets we have for measuring the composition of any atmosphere it may possess, he added. Jack Madden is a student at Cornell University who helped with the research on GJ357. He says the new discoveries have opened the door for astronomers to test theories and models about exoplanets. We built the first models of what this new world could be like, Madden said. Just knowing that liquid water could exist on the surface of this planet motivates scientists to find ways of detecting signs of life. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, we are visiting a vast and remote park in the state of Alaska. The park is bigger than the country of Switzerland. It is 6 times the size of Yellowstone. In fact, it is the largest national park in America. Its name is Wrangell St. Elias. Do not worry if you have not heard of America's biggest national park. Most Americans do not know its name. But Wrangell St. Elias contains some of North America's largest glaciers and volcanoes. It is also home to 9 of the highest mountains in America. The park extends more than 5.3 million hectares. 4 mountain ranges come together here, including the Wrangell Mountains and the St. Elias Mountains. The Wrangell Mountains cover much of the park. They were formed over the last 5 million years from volcanic activity. The St. Elias Mountains stretch into Canada's Yukon Territory. The Chugach Mountains cover the southern part of the park. The Alaskan Mountain Range forms some of the huge park's northern boundary. The mountain landscape is wild. Much of it is also difficult to reach. Private companies offer flight seeing tours on planes and helicopters. From high above, visitors witness Wrangell St. Elias's beauty.
Rivers and glaciers help tell the story of Wrangell St. Elias National Park. These rivers, with names like Copper, Chitina, Chisana, and Chittistone, come from the park's many glaciers. They wind through land carved out by other huge glaciers long ago. The Copper, the largest river of them all, flows into the Gulf of Alaska. Other rivers take a more dramatic path. The Chittistone River becomes Chittistone Falls, a 91-meter-tall waterfall that drops over a steep wall. Glaciers cover almost 13,000 square kilometers of the park. In the summer months, the park's rivers carry their meltwater. It is filled with tiny pieces of sand, stone, and other materials. A buildup of this sediment forces the rivers to flow through new channels. This causes the river beds to twist and turn. From up above, these rivers can look like braided hair. One of the park's most striking places is the Hubbard Glacier. It is the longest tidewater glacier in North America. A tidewater glacier is one that begins in a mountain valley and flows all the way to a body of water. The Hubbard Glacier is 120 kilometers long and nearly 10 kilometers wide. It begins on the 6,000-meter-tall Mount Logan in Canada's Yukon Territory. It ends in the waters of a place called Disenchantment Bay. Hubbard was named in 1890 after Gardner Hubbard, the first president of the National Geographic Society. The massive glacier is only getting bigger. Unlike most glaciers, Hubbard is thickening and extending. Other glaciers face melting caused by increasing temperatures. But experts say Hubbard reacts in an opposite way to climate change. As the Earth's temperature rises, the area around Wrangell St. Elias gets more snow and rain. Scientists say this snow and rain is what permits the glacier to grow. Sometimes very fast growth causes huge pieces of ice to break apart from the glacier. Scientists call this calving. The ice creates a thunderous sound as it breaks and falls into the water. Hubbard Glacier's size, beauty, and calving activity have made it popular with park visitors. Large boats travel through Disenchantment Bay, taking passengers close to the glacier.
Wrangell St. Elias's system of glaciers and rivers help support animal life in the park. The park's Dall sheep may be the most famous animal residents. Alaska's Dall sheep are the world's northernmost wild sheep population. About 13,000 Dall sheep live within the park's borders. Visitors can look for their white bodies and huge brown horns near rocky mountainsides. Visitors might also see black bears, brown bears, moose, and caribou. Caribou are large North American reindeer with huge, wide antlers. Along the coast, seals and sea lions lie on the ice and splash in the water. Wrangell St. Elias became a national park in 1980. The park's main visitors center is about 300 kilometers east of Anchorage. The long drive to get to the park is an adventure itself. The trip includes roadside views of mountains, glaciers, waterfalls, and lakes. Its distant location makes it one of America's least visited national parks. About 75,000 people visit Wrangell St. Elias each year. By comparison, parks like Yosemite and Yellowstone get about 3 million visitors each year. Visitors can experience the park's pristine nature as well as its historical areas. The Athabascan people lived in the area thousands of years ago. The park includes sites of their villages and hunting areas. The park also has many historical structures and buildings. The National Park Service says the structures represent periods of exploration, mining, and transportation.
One historical place is called Kennicott Milltown. The picturesque town tells a story of westward expansion and discovery. Miners processed nearly $200 million worth of copper at Kennicott Mines between 1911 and 1938. Many of the buildings that remain in the town have been empty for 60 years. Some are in disrepair. The National Park Service works with the local community to restore and preserve them. Some visitors stay at Kennicott during their trip to Wrangell St. Elias. The family-owned Kennicott Glacier Lodge provides beautiful views of the surrounding glacial mountains. It also gives visitors a chance to try exciting outdoor activities like glacier hiking or ice climbing. Some visitors choose to sleep in the wild outdoors. Private campsites are located in many areas of the park. Some visitors set out on long hikes in the park's backcountry area. Whatever way you visit, the immense and untouched beauty of Wrangell St. Elias National Park is guaranteed to awe. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.